Welcome, everyone, to WFHR's Playmakers. For this March 27th, 2023, got your host, James, here. I am joined by my partner in sports today, Seth Havhager. Good morning, Seth.
Good morning, everyone.
Thanks for joining us. We're here to take your phone calls, 424-2600. Feel free to call up and join the conversation. We're looking forward to hanging out with you guys today. Want to send a big shout out to our friends at Quality Plus Printing, getting your words out. Big thank you to Quality Plus sponsoring this segment. Again, 424-2600. That's the phone number to call to join the conversation. Looking forward to talk with all of you. Seth, how are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine. I'm out in the middle of the woods somewhere, undisclosed location. You know, just in case I say something controversial, so they can't come and get me.
We thought that was safest. We thought it was best to keep Seth in a very safe area, so he couldn't be harmed by anybody, or he couldn't harm anyone. Either or.
That's right. Yeah.
Plenty to talk about, Seth, in the sports world. I want to get into opening day this Thursday with you, talk a little baseball, of course. But we'd be remiss if we did not touch on March Madness, the madness of March to kick things off.
Oh, wow.
First time since 1969, no number one seeds going in, not into the Final Four, into the Elite Eight, let alone the Final Four. We have a mix. We have a mess, a fun mess, a wonderful mess, a madness mess, but a mess nonetheless.
Yes, it is.
It's an interesting thing. Now, Seth, I know that you're not as in tune with college basketball as I am, So I want to look at this from your point of view, mine, and the audiences of the enjoyment level of this. Like, are you enjoying this more? It's actual madness, and not like it is usually where we call it March Madness, but a 2 and a 1 seed are playing for the final, in the final game and stuff. We truly have madness this year, and I believe the first time in my lifetime, in our lifetime, that this has happened, where it's been like this. So I think it's interesting. Are you enjoying that part of it, what is your take from it?
I love it. Yeah. Absolutely love it. I'm not one of those legacy guys, that goes ahead and, I like to see North Carolina and Duke and all these things, with these storied programs. No way. Give me the underdog. Give me the schools we've never heard of, the ones we have to look up where they are. Those are always my favorite stories.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Speaking of, I'm so glad you said that. So Seth and I and a couple of other friends of ours and stuff, we have a baseball draft. We did our draft yesterday. Seth, and I like your team, by the way. Nice draft. We got done with that, and afterwards, there's some college basketball out, and then Creighton and San Diego State were playing. And this happens every year. I like, where's Creighton? Where is Creighton? And so, sure enough, like around the room, everybody takes guesses of where Creighton is. And every year, everybody is blown away. Nebraska.
It's
Omaha, Nebraska. I forget every year. So I think that's
every year.
It's a great point, man. I think that it's part of what pulls us to college sports, especially college basketball, in particular college basketball.
Yeah.
Is the unknown factor, the not knowing these teams, these players, it's kind of new and fresh and something to root for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so for me, this is great. Even though I made it one team to the Final Four in my bracket. San Diego State was the one I got in, and of course after that, I have nothing left. That was
nice.
my last chance.
My last chance was Gonzaga. That was the only team I had left. My bracket is completely busted now. It's completely gone.
Oh, I went. That game, that specific game. If you don't mind, I real quick. It wasn't just that Gonzaga got beat. They got trashed.
Yeah.
I could not believe the final score, what UConn had did to them. And I was looking at this, I was like, what happened here? Wow, Gonzaga's shooting was historically bad. And I was like, wow, but still, I got to give UConn a lot of credit because, man, I did not see them going this far.
No, I did not have them going this far like a lot of people either. I wonder, too, how much this is going to keep happening in college athletics. They keep adding games to the college season. Keep adding tournaments, especially with basketball. They keep adding tournaments and everything. And you get late in the season, these kids are not used. They're high school. Most of these kids are used to high school basketball, where you play, 20 games, maybe?
you know, whatever, yeah.
They're going into game 40, game 45 sometimes. That's going to take it. We see it with rookie pro athletes making that shift, mm-hmm. where you mm-hmm. I remember Saquon Barkley came out the gate like just an animal, just so darn talented, so darn good, and then he hit that wall, that rookie wall that every player hits, and yeah. they, you know, the rest of the season just not as good, not as much energy and everything. That's just human experience. That's the way it works. I wonder if we're going to see a little more of this in college athletics, where these big number one seeds that are so dominant all season long, and then that happens, where they just run out of gas.
Well, I think Purdue is a great example of that. You know, they rode the big guy, you know, their star, you know, monstrous player. That first half of the season, they looked untouchable. Like, they were like a odds-on favorite. But I think what you just said is totally what happened to them. They ran out of gas. And then look what happened, you know, at the very beginning of the tournament, they get turned away right at the door.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think you have something there, because, you know, I think if going forward, and maybe, I don't know if anyone's done any research on this, maybe seeing if it's the deep teams that are the ones with a good bench, you know, they have a lot of really good, you know, role players, or they're the ones that make it further, or that sort of thing. It'd be interesting to find out.
That's an interesting thing, huh? I'd like to look into that, too.
Yeah.
We want to know what you guys think, of course. 424-2600. Feel free to call up and let us know what you've thought of the March Madness season so far. just to wrap up the topic for now, I wanted to do this example real quick. So, March Madness, the Final Four teams, Florida Atlantic and San Diego State, are going to face off on Saturday, April 1st, about 5:09. And then on the other side of the bracket, number 5th-ranked Miami taking on number 4th-ranked UConn. That'll be a little bit later in the day, again on Saturday, April 1st. Florida Atlantic, San Diego State, Miami, and UConn are facing off for the national championship. That sounds like an NIT schedule.
It does.
In the NIT.
Not to take anything away from the teams. It's just, you're right. It's just so you're not expecting it.
Nobody in the world ever had that, ever. Like, in any year, at any time. And then you look at the NIT tournament, and they're down to their Final Four. And, of course, North Texas and Wisconsin are going to be facing each other. Those are 2-3 seeds. That game you can hear right here at WFHR starting at 5 o'clock. And on this other side of the bracket, Utah Valley, and who isn't even ranked, and UAB, who is ranked 4th. So the madness has even gone into the NIT tournament.
It's been that the whole year has been that way. It's been hot potato. No, you take it. No, you take it, kind of thing.
Really, so has.
But it's been so much fun to watch. Personally, I just think it's been great.
And I don't think that we're going to be seeing this change anytime soon. No. You know, with the one and done, where they're going to be changing that a little bit, but with players not staying in the league as long as they used to.
Or the transfer portal, too.
Yeah. I do want to touch on one other thing college basketball related before I do, though. Some breaking news. this just broke across the wire. Baltimore Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson has requested a trade from the Ravens. So I think a lot of people, it was 50-50. People thought that he was either going to stay with Baltimore or leave. Usually the trade request is the sign that he is not going back.
Yes. Yes, in general. Not surprising either, I don't think.
No. It's interesting. You know, the only surprising thing is the way that the NFL thinks. It's surprising that the NFL and these owners think that they're not, that we can't tell what colluding is.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, let's see, Lamar Jackson throws his name out there, former, like a year removed from being MVP, one of the most exciting players in football, in the most coveted position in all of sports. There is literally no position in all of sports that comes even close to the quarterback. Lamar Jackson is the prototype of what every coach wants in a quarterback. And you're telling me 20-some teams don't want him. That's a joke. If you expect me to believe that, I've got a bridge I'd love to sell you in San Francisco.
How many teams right now could use a quarterback?
Yeah.
I mean, how many? Seriously. Yeah, and he's a good one, a very good one. Like you said, MVP. Come on, man.
It's
ridiculous.
The idea that there isn't collusion going on there is a joke.
Yeah, uh-huh.
That's a joke. Mm-hmm. it is a joke to try to cover Caitlin Clark. Good luck covering that young lady. I just have to give some flowers to Caitlin Clark. I know we don't talk a ton of women's basketball around here, and I apologize for that. That's on the host. That's on me. But it, I watch a lot of college basketball, and I've been watching for the last couple of years. And I would say going back to last year, this year, the most exciting player to watch in college athletics, arguably, but certainly in college basketball, men's, women's game, by far and away, it is Miss Caitlin Clark. Mm-hmm. Caitlin last night had 41 points, 12 assists, 10 rebounds, 8 threes, 3 steals in the biggest game of her career.
I
don't know. I'm trying to see here when the last time Iowa was in a Final Four. I believe 93 was the last time that they got this far.
Wow.
That's pretty cool.
You know, speaking of, you know, just what we were talking about with men's basketball, college basketball, it's happening in women's too. The traditional, this year, the traditional powerhouses have gone out early. Yeah. I mean, there's still a couple there, but a lot of them, they were taken out early, and this has not happened in women's basketball in a while.
Yeah, it's a great point. It seems to be all, it's affected all basketball. All basketball has been affected by this. It's pretty interesting. Shout out to Caitlin. Always like to see, those that don't know, she's from like West Des Moines and stuff, so seeing somebody do that for their home team too, that's pretty darn cool.
Yeah, that's so good.
If you have not gotten to see any highlights, go ahead and Google highlights of Caitlin Clark, and you'll think that you're watching Steph Curry. She's just masterful with that ball. A lot of fun to watch.
She may be the single best college basketball player, period, right now. Period.
Yeah. A whole 100% agree. I want to, of course, get into opening day coming up this Thursday, but I feel like before we do that, Seth, we kind of have to touch on the World Baseball Classic.
We do. You know, the script writers in Hollywood could not have written a better ending to the WBC.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, this is the one, I think, that put it on the map.
Yeah.
This is the one, you know, it's been a few years now. This was the fifth, I think. Mm-hmm. And people, you know, and us baseball folk, you know, we've been paying attention to it because it's always fun. It's so much fun to see, you know, players that, you know, from different countries play together. You know, all the great superstars get to play, you know, together on these teams. And but this year, with the way it went through the last four games, or the last the final four teams and the games they played, just the run up to it, the walk off home run by Japan over Mexico, and then just the storybook ending. USA versus Japan, Otani versus – I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. You can't, I don't even know if you're human. I would think that would pull you in, let alone anything else. Like, that's just so darn exciting. anybody, especially coming into this year, going even into last year and years before, it doesn't take a lot of eyeballs to see that the ratings have been slipping for baseball. And baseball's been trying to find ways to make the sport exciting, to bring people, young people, to the sport. They're trying to do this while also trying to navigate, it's the most traditional sport there is. So,
yeah, exactly.
You know, the idea of let them have fun and at the same time respecting the game and all these things, trying to figure all that out. And then you throw into that mix the World Baseball Classic, which has been hurting for years with the ratings. Like, it has not done well for quite some time. Then this year, all of a sudden, a big change happens. People want to play for their home country. They have this pride. They want to play for their home team. This Olympic-type feeling comes out. And so you have guys, you know, some really interesting scenarios. I think Randy Ardoza is how do you say that kid's name? The young player for Tampa Bay, the outfielder. That was so exciting.
Rosarena.
Rosarena, thank you.
Yeah, Randy Rosarena, yeah.
He's Cuban, but he played for the Mexican team because Mexico gave him asylum. And that's where he got discovered by Tampa Bay by baseball scouts. And his family, I believe his wife is Mexican, and he met her there. So he asked the president of Mexico if he could play for them, and they, of course, let him and gave him citizenship. So you have all these interesting kind of like storylines like that going on. How many of us saw like a former player coaching a team, like you got Yadier Molina coaching that team and stuff? Like, there was excitement there. and I think that the biggest thing to come out of this not bigger than the ratings, bigger than all these things. I think especially for other countries, you got to see how other countries play the sport. The excitement and the fun and the charisma. Like, this is weird to me. We're the rebels in America. As far as other countries go, we're the rebels. We're the ones with the punk rock hair and the leather jacket and all that stuff. That's what America is. We've always been the rebels. We've been that kind of thing. But with baseball, we're the exact opposite. We're the boring ones. We're the,
no, actually, you have to play this game, and you have to play it this way. And if you don't play it that way, you're not playing the game properly. And go sit on the bench. You're not.
Every other country, it's not, they always tell us it's Latin countries. It's not just Latin countries. European countries. Every other, literally every other country, flipping that bat, having fun, enjoying themselves. And guess what, everybody? The ratings in those other countries for baseball, very good. Very solid.
Sky high. Yep.
I don't. It's not like they're onto something. They already knew this. We should already know this. Like the idea of like baseball being what it was when even before we were born, Seth. Like that changed a long time ago. Let me introduce you to not just Ricky Henderson, but Nolan Ryan. Nolan Ryan was a trash talker. Nolan Ryan was a guy that would point at batters and stuff and say, "You, I got you." Like to the worst, some of the like, come on. I mean, the idea that we can't have this fun in baseball is kind of silly.
Yeah. Well, and you know, Nolan Ryan's a great example. If you talk to him later after he retired, he would say stuff like, he's like, "In my view, the mound is your territory." As the pitcher, this is your territory, and you're going to defend it against everything. And that's the way he looked at it, and that's why he was so competitive. Ask Robin Ventura. But at the same time, he was it's the competitive spirit. You know, he talks about, you know, all the facing Babe Ruth and all the greats, and he's like, I would have loved to face those guys. You know, me against them. You know, who's the better guy?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of attitude that you see. And I got to say, that was Shohei Ohtani. That at bat against Mike Trout, he was like, you know, this is it. It's me and you. Yep. We're doing this. And he gets him. I mean, it's you know, the game is on the line. At least the tie game is on the line. And he's throwing him, you know, 100-mile-an-hour fastballs. And then he strikes him out with a slider. So there's a rating scale for pitches. It goes, it goes from 20 to 80, you know, and how good a pitch is. Mm-hmm. That slider he threw registered at 81.
Wow.
Shohei Ohtani does things no other human being has ever done before.
Yeah,
it's just crazy.
We got to quit trying to compare this guy to other athletes. There is no comp. There is no comparison to him. You have to bring up two different athletes to try to find comparable stats to this guy. it's crazy.
It's nuts.
Do you think because we got 3 years until the next one? Do you think the hype from this, you know, I saw it reported that two out of three TVs in Japan were watching that game. Mm-hmm. The ratings were insane here in America. Biggest ratings ever for a baseball game. Do you think that hype will carry on for the next couple of years?
I think it will, especially if. Okay, so one of the things that we noticed this time that I don't think we've really heard before in the past, how much players were hyping it up about being there. Mm-hmm. You know, you got someone like Francisco Lindor who was saying how much he enjoyed, even though, you know, his teammate got injured playing the WBC.
Right.
And that way, I mean, he was bummed by that, but he kept talking about how much he loved playing for his country, how much he enjoyed the competition. Look at all the guys from the U.S. that were talking about it. Every one of them were like, I would do this again in a heartbeat. And if you can get more of the, you know, guys like that, think about this. If the U.S. had, you know, all of the big pitchers they could have had, I don't think it would have been a contest. The U.S. would have won.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
If they would have gotten the big guys, yeah.
Yeah, if we could have gotten even a couple of, like, even one ace, even just one, I think it would have been a whole different tournament. Our pitching was horrible. Not horrible. Lance Lynn, and you got guys. Horrible in comparison to some of these other all-star teams.
Exactly.
Another thing real quick here, you got to miss me with the whole players getting injured thing.
Me too.
I mentioned that Seth and I just did our baseball draft yesterday. How many guys did we see injured, Seth, that had nothing to do with the World Baseball Classic that got injured in spring training?
Yes, you are 100% right. I mean, yeah, there was the one big one, you know. But I mean, all these other ones are, you know, Gavin Lux did not hurt himself at the WBC. They did not hurt. It's just injuries happen. No matter what, you're playing a game. They're going to happen.
I can't remember who it was. There was a guy who purposely did not go to the tournament because he wanted to focus on the season and stay healthy. He's on the DL right now. I wish I could think of who it was. But, yeah, it was. I will agree with, they do need to schedule this better. This was a horrible – like, you could not find a worse time to play this World Baseball going into the regular season. That's like when they have the Olympics and the hockey's going on, and they got to kind of cut the season in half, and so all these hockey players can go play for their countries and stuff. There's a better way to do this. They just got to figure it out. I don't think that they expected. I don't think baseball expected it to be this big, and I don't blame them. I don't think any of us could have. I don't think anybody could have seen that necessarily coming. But now that it's here, not only for one, I think you're gonna have to get more pro athletes involved.
Yes.
But you're also gonna have a different schedule. I'm sure that they'll figure that part out. We lost in basketball. I'll never forget losing in basketball, and I think getting a bronze or a silver or whatever, and the game changed after that. You will never see college kids fighting for the Olympic gold anymore. America's never giving up that again, as far as basketball is concerned. I don't think that it's going to be. I think that it's going to be very similar with the World Baseball Classic.
And here's the hope that it won't become as big as the World Cup. But it's going to be one of those, I think, that people are going to look forward to every 3 years.
Let's go ahead and take a phone call. Good morning. You're on the show.
Yeah, first about the World Baseball Classic. U.S. has got to stop picking these 35-year-old ex-superstars for players.
Yes.
Let's get all the up-and-coming guys that are 28 and something like that. So these older guys.
Yeah.
Especially that Harper guy. But then going back to the, I'm going to start with going to the Brewers. Going to the Brewers, it's looking like the Brewers are going to go with some of the younger players, Sal Frerich, Bryce Train, Joey Weimer, Garrett. And they're being compared to what the Brewers had years ago when they had Prince Fielder and Mallory. And Robin and JJ and Gantner and all those guys. So I really like the fact that they're going to probably have two or three of these younger guys on a team this year.
They have for one, Milwaukee's had a nice farm system for a very long time. So anytime I see it, there's certain organizations like Milwaukee, Oakland, I hear a young name coming up or they're calling a name up and it catches my ear. Like, wait a minute, who's this guy? Because it just seems like they have such a good reputation and history of this. And then you bring in the idea of like, Some of the money that is kind of holding Milwaukee back is with older players, and the only way to kind of get rid of those older players is to give these younger guys a couple at bats, some time on the mound or whatever it might be. It's a good mix. The catch is, of course, well, how do you rebuild while still being competitive? I think Milwaukee is one of those teams that has had to learn to do that because being a small market team and makes them actually very good at this, again, similar to Oakland. Every year, it's not every year, but pretty much every other year, it seems like Oakland's competitive. And you're like, well, who does Oakland have? Oakland doesn't have anybody. And then they're traded off that team like a year or two later when they become names. Milwaukee has a little bit of that, but they tend to keep their talent. They tend to hold on to their players a little bit more, like a Christian Yelich or a Fielder, like you mentioned there before, sir.
Yeah, I'm anxious to see how Javi Guerrero does. He just converted to being a pitcher in 2019. He was a position player up until that time, and he's got a pretty good fastball, 95, 97 miles an hour, so I think he's going to do okay. I think he's going to make the team.
Is there a storyline or a player or anything that interests you the most when it comes to the start of the season this Thursday?
Yeah, I think Joey Weimer, we're going to find out that he's going to be a whole lot better than what we thought, you know. So
I like that. That's a good choice.
He's got the size to be a good power hitter. So
yeah, no, I've heard good things about him. I'm going to be keeping an eye on him for sure. That's a good one. Always appreciate the time, sir. We're looking forward to talking more baseball with you throughout the whole summer.
All right, thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for the time. Appreciate it.
I have a storyline with the Brewers that I'm following this year, and I'm hoping this happens because I really like the player. He had a terrible year last year in Seattle, Jesse Winker. I'm hoping that the change of scenery back to the NL Central and the fact that he's playing in AmFam Field is going to help. You know, it's a great hitter's park for one thing. He's got a great eye. He's always been good at getting on base. I think he may be a surprise this year. I think he may have a really good year for him.
I thought that was a sneaky signing. He's only 29. He's young yet. So, I mean, we've seen plenty of athletes turn it around after one bad season. Him and that Contreras that they got at catcher.
Oh, gosh. A steal.
Just a steal.
I don't know how the Brewers got themselves involved in that trade, but they basically gave up nobody and got a very good offensive catcher. I don't know what they did, but I got to give them credit for that one. That was a steal.
Yeah. I know a lot of the pull was to his, I don't know if it's his brother or cousin.
His brother.
It is his brother. Yeah. I know a lot of the attention was given to him going from Chicago to Seattle, or St. Louis.
St. Louis.
And I get that, but I thought that was a bigger move, that Milwaukee getting that kid. I thought that was bigger. Let's take a phone call. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. Go ahead. I was going to say the Brewers, they're shaping up pretty good. It's all going to depend on, you know, injuries, of course, with so many teams. But it'll be interesting to see.
I'm very curious to see how this goes if they're competing towards the trade deadline, too, if they're buyers or sellers because of this deal, the issues they've got with the starting pitching and the money and everything. Let's take a phone call before we go to break. Good morning. You're on the show.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Gary.
Hey, do you have any schedules yet?
Not yet. As soon as we get some, if we have some schedules dropped off, we will definitely let people know, though.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you for the info.
Yeah, take care, Gary. Talk soon. 424-2600, that's the number you'll call up to join the conversation. For now, Seth and I are going to take a quick break, come back and have some more fun taking your phone calls and talking sports with you on Playmakers, brought to you by our great friends at Quality Plus Printing, getting your words out here at WFHR. Welcome back to Playmakers, everybody, here at WFHR. Locally grown radio, Seth and James here with you. Hope you're having a great Monday out there. Thanks so much for joining us. And a big thank you to Quality Plus Printing sponsoring the segment. We appreciate them. Sponsoring the show. Appreciate them doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A little bit later, I want to get into this. The Green Bay Packers and local officials are working to bring the NFL draft to Wisconsin. I want to talk about that and really talk about whatever you guys want to talk about. 424-2600, feel free to call up and join the conversation. But I want to stay on MLB for just a little bit longer with you, Seth. I want to know, I asked as far as storylines going involving the Brewers and local team here, but I'm curious as far as on a big perspective, going into the season, treat it as if you don't have a favorite team or a favorite, you could have a favorite player, but maybe you don't have a favorite team that kind of pulls your attention to just that market or whatever. Mm-hmm. What are you most interested by this season, going into this season? What is it? Is it a team? What storylines are pulling you in?
There's a couple there, and I think the one of the big ones, of course, is the rule changes. Seeing how that affects the game, the limited shifting. The limited shifting in the infield, because apparently now outfielders are becoming like infielders. So they didn't put any restrictions on shifting the outfield.
Right.
So we'll see if that works.
Yeah.
How that works.
Yeah.
Stolen bases, though, I'm really hoping we see more chances on the bases with some. And in fact, my fantasy team is going to have to count on it because I deliberately picked a lot of speed guys because I wanted to see if it was going to help me at all.
I noticed that when that was happening. I had to tell you something really interesting. Mm-hmm. I've never had this happen before. I was looking, and for those that don't do, you know, drafting and all that, you can click a player and put them on your watch list so you don't forget them, and you can draft them when your turn is coming up. I literally clicked on Freddie Peralta right as you drafted him.
Oh, really?
Like, I've never had that, like, literally hit him, and I'm like, what happened there? I look, and you drafted him. Like, it was the weirdest thing.
Is that what
right
it was?
As it happened. Yeah. I noticed a pattern there with your guy with the speed right away. Yep. I thought that was interesting. I couldn't agree with you more, man. I think that that's something. I think you're actually onto something there, too, as far as not only fantasy sports go, but as far as the season goes. A lot of these coaches are taking advantage of the speed on these players for the first time in years. If for some of them in their careers, they're getting an opportunity. Mm-hmm. That's very exciting. I don't know how you can't be excited about that if you're a baseball fan. I'm with you. I think the thing that pulls me in the most, because I don't talk about baseball as much, I think that it might come across sometimes like I'm not a diehard fan. Very similar to being a Chicago fan in Wisconsin, I had to fight to stay a fan. Like,
right.
Especially going to school out here and everything and the things that you deal with and all that. And I'm not sure. Playing a violin. I chose to be that fan. That's my choice. But I dealt with that early on in life, though, in my family. Literally every one of my family members, like my brother born in Wisconsin here, he's a Brewer fan, but of course he wasn't around when I was little. All of them, Cub fans. I'm the only White Sox fan in the whole family. And trust me, they love to remind me of this. I spent a long time dealing with that and being made fun of and those things and everything. So I earned my stripes and I'm very proud and love my team. But that being said, I don't know how you can't be like taking like that has to almost be the second storyline in your brain. These rule changes have to bring your attention first, no matter who your team is, no matter how good they are. I don't care if you're a Dodger fan. I would be paying more just as much attention to the rules as I am the standings. I do have a question, though.
OK.
And I asked this last year when a lot of this stuff came up, and I've asked it in years before, too. What are we paying hitting coaches for? when we were kids, Seth, if they tried to tell Tony Gwynn, Tony likes to hit over on this side of the park, we're going to put our second baseman over a little bit more and our shortstop right here, what would Tony Gwynn do? Hit it to the other side. Hit it to the other side. Growing up, that's all I ever heard is, well, Major League Baseball players, all of them can hit the ball wherever they want and everything. Well, what the what? Why do we even need the rule changes? Like, shouldn't this have fixed itself?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, and going back to when we were kids, I think you remember this. The best hitters were the ones, they always said the same thing about them. They hit to all fields.
Yeah.
The best hitters were always, they hit to all fields.
We grew up with all Jeff McNeils. Like everybody was a Jeff McNeil growing up. Nowadays, it's like, he's it. He's the one guy I know in baseball that can hit the ball wherever he wants to.
Yep. My favorite player growing up was Kirby Puckett, who would hit it anywhere at any time.
Right.
I mean, that's what that was his game, and that's what he did.
I don't want to. I make it a joke about the hitting coaches and stuff. I don't want to just pick on them because I think more. It has a lot more to do with the GMs being the coaches now. And being able to call down to the dugout and say, hey, do this. Statistically, this is the best thing for you. Instead of just going to gut. Like, stats are great. Data is fantastic. It's how we solve a lot of life's problems. But it very seldom should it be the sole outlier. I think that you not only do you hurt the game and lessen your chances of winning, but I don't think that that's the spirit of sport. I don't think that if that's the case, then we do all this on a computer and let it long before like fantasy sports, they used to have like things that would do that, like a video game or whatever. They would just you punched in a bunch of numbers and it just gave you the outcome. And that was
right,
it.
Exactly.
Like, might as well do that. If that's the case,
yeah, and I don't, who wants to see that? I mean, it's funny because now the rules are going against that now, these new rules. They're going against the shift. They're going against, you know, everyone strikes out or walks, you know. They're looking more. Get on base, yeah, still that's good, but then when you're on base, do something, you know, make it more exciting.
I also think that some of this stuff is going to – they're going to have to get through some growing pains with some of these changes too.
Oh, yeah.
Work around that. Part of this was done to make more balls in play, to have more offense.
Yes.
And one thing that I think that that maybe they didn't discover right away, but the Aces did. Max Scherzer sure did right away. Oh, wait a minute. This gives me even more power. I even more control. So I don't know that whether that's going to affect hitters or not. We're going to have to wait to see to find out. But that there's that part of it, too, there where they did this for offense. And it looks like it's going to help guys like Scherzer out even more.
Yeah, it there was a great time after Max came out and said how much he loved these new rules, and he was already using the pitch clock to his advantage. This poor young rookie guy coming up in spring training, Max stares at him for 14 seconds. That's an eternity.
Yeah,
the poor kid, he must have been terrified. Feel bad for
it. I imagine that right after that, like, it's the first time in Major League history, instead of telling them to go to the showers, they told them to go to the therapist. Go to the therapist. Exactly. Hit the therapist, kid. Hit the therapist. You're going to need it. I don't know.
He was just staring at me the whole time, man. I don't know what to do.
That kid is waking up in the middle of the night just having, like, two different colored eyes staring. Like, in his dreams, just staring at him. Like,
just terrifying, yeah. That's awesome.
I really am excited about this, though. I can't wait for Thursday. I can't wait for the start of the season to kick off.
Yeah.
We got a lot of fun, exciting storylines and a lot of things interesting, I think, as far as the season goes. Even the opening day rosters are interesting. So many guys being the starting pitcher for a team, like, you look at the Dodgers. Well, I'm of course, I almost said Koufax. Wow.
He's a lefty, you know.
I think it's Dustin. Oh no, Urias is starting for them.
Urias, yeah.
Urias is starting for them. That's a change. Like, that's different.
Mm-hmm.
They've got some projected opening day lineups that are quite interesting, I think, too. I think the thing that's going to be very fascinating to see, too, is how this affects advertising dollars. You have a shorter games. You have less opportunity for advertising commercials. And I have not heard anybody talk about this yet, but I don't know if that affects the game or not. I don't know if it's going to or not. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. But that's something that, all your answers come back to money. So if we're going to be affecting, if it's affecting advertising dollars, then we might see some changes then too. Who knows?
Although, it'd be interesting to see, if the games, and hopefully they are shorter. I'm very much hoping they're going to be shorter games. But at the same time, if you've got more eyeballs watching the game and it's a shorter game, I don't think that's such a bad – I think advertisers might be okay with that too. So, it's a trade-off for sure. But we'll see if it's a good or a bad one.
Should be quite interesting. I had one other thing I wanted to look at here, too, and this is just for fun, before we get into anything too crazy. I got something here, the all-time opening day starting leaderboard. Do you want to take any guesses at any of this, or do you want to run? I have here in front of me the top five guys who have had most opening starting days. They started the most opening days.
Okay. Well, I'll try to guess on this. Okay. I might know some of them. So.
All right. So do you have, because I got the 1 through 5 here. Do you want to throw any names out there?
Is this the as in any position starting?
Opening day starting pitchers. Guys who have started opening day the most in their careers.
Okay. I know Jack Morris is probably on that list.
Ooh. Good name.
Is he?
Good. Yes, okay, he is. Yes. Right, Jack Morris is on here. Yes.
Okay. Oh, no. That was like the one I had.
That would have been the only one I would have had too, Matt.
I'm trying to think of guys who are with teams for a long time. Here's a blast from the past. How about Dave Steeb for the Blue Jays?
Oh, nice. I was going to go with Dave Stewart. I was going to nice. I was thinking of maybe him. Nice. We're both thinking of Dave's. Looking at this list, number one, I'll start at number five. Number five,
okay.
Walter Johnson with 14 career opening day starts.
Oh, totally makes sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the big train. Yeah.
The big unit next, Randy Johnson with 14 as well.
Really? Mm-hmm. Wow. That makes sense, but I didn't know that. Huh.
Your guy, Jack Morris, came in at number 3 with 14.
Mm-hmm.
And then Steve Carlton with 14.
Oh, that makes sense too, yeah.
And number 1 on the list with the most opening day starts in MLB history, Tom Seaver.
Oh, 16. Tom, terrific. Yeah. 16.
16 opening. That's insane.
Can you think about today when, like, every year it's a different one for teams.
Yeah,
16. for one guy, that's just, oh man.
Running down,
how good he was.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
And the longevity of that. Usually, yes. You know, I imagine most people that are listening to a sports show know this, but if you don't, that usually your opening day pitcher is your best pitcher. And I mean, so mm-hmm. 16 years, Tom Seaver was the best pitcher on the team he was on. That's pretty darn impressive.
Wow, he was good.
Yeah, yeah. One of those names that sort of gets lost in the shuffle sometimes, too, when we talk about greatest pitchers of all time.
You know what? You are 100% right. And maybe it was because he wasn't, you know, he wasn't a big self-promoting guy. You know, I mean, he had an ego, but it's not like he was out there talking all the time.
Yeah.
And I think that's something we don't think about. He won 3 Cy Young Awards.
Yeah.
He felt he should have won 4 in 1971 when Ferguson Jenkins won it instead.
Yeah.
This is a great story. Tom Seaver got a cat that year and he named him Fergie Jenkins.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it lost to him.
Interestingly, I think my dad, Ron Santo, he liked a lot, but I think Ferguson Jenkins, Ernie Banks, those were his two favorites. Jenkins, a little bit more than Ernie, but not by much. And yet, the only reason I know about Tom Seaver is from my dad, because my dad loved Tom Seaver as well. So that's kind of interesting.
That's great.
Looking at your opening day starting pitchers, the Arizona will have Zach Gallen. The Braves will have Max Fried. Baltimore, who another interesting team. I'm going to be really, really curious to see if the Orioles have continue last season what they were doing.
They had a great year last year, yeah.
Kyle Gibson will be taking the mound for them. Corey Kluber will be for the Red Sox. Marcus Stroman will be for the Cubs. Dylan Cease will be for the White Sox.
Hunter, my guy.
Yeah,
my guys.
Yeah. Stole him right from out under me. That was my fault. I was looking at him the round before, and I'm like, oh, I can hang in there. Nope, I should have known.
Nope.
It was a great pickup by you. Cease pitched with a 2.20 ERA and a Cy Young runner-up last year, of course.
Yeah, and he was like fifth in strikeouts, too. So, yeah.
He's only getting better, too. Mm-hmm. The Reds will have Hunter Green. The Guardians will have Shane Bieber. Rockies, Jermaine Marquez. Tigers will have Eduardo Rodriguez. Framber Valdez will be for Houston. Zach Greinke for the Royals.
I love it. I love Zach Greinke. He's still pitching, and I love he's pitching for the Royals. That's so awesome.
That's pretty cool, yeah. Mm-hmm. The California Angels of Anaheim, of Los Angeles, of Santa Barbara, of Carpinteria.
San Jose.
Yeah, San Jose will be Shohei Ohtani, of course. As I mentioned, Julio Reyes will be for Los Angeles for the Dodgers. Just surprising, just, you know, Kershaw being Kershaw. Mm-hmm. But I love what he said about that. Did you hear that?
No, I didn't.
They asked him, like, as soon as the news got announced, the reporters went in his face right away and like, come on, you got, you know, asking for controversy. It's like, no, he's better than me. He's better than me right now. I'm getting older in the tooth here and everything. Like, he was just very honest about it. I thought it was so cool. It was so, you don't get that introspection, insight from player or looking inward very often from athletes.
Yeah. Well, I'm not surprised though. Clayton Kershaw's one of those kind of guys. For
seems
sure.
Like, yeah. I'm a big fan of Kershaw. Big fan. Mm-hmm. Another big fan of this guy, Sandy Alcantara from the Marlins.
Oh,
kid.
He had such a great year last year.
Yeah. Corbin Burns going to be taking the mound for your Milwaukee Brewers out there, everybody.
No surprise there.
No. And for Seth's twins, Pablo Lopez.
Yes, that's kind of a surprise.
Okay.
I thought they would have gone with like Sonny Gray on that one. But
I thought for sure Sonny Gray. Maybe Joe Ryan, but I thought Sonny Gray for sure. Because Lopez just got there, didn't he?
Yeah, they just traded Luis Arraez for him from Miami, yeah. So they must think pretty highly of him.
Yeah, well, it was a nice. Well, you're going to trade the reigning like batting champion. You better, you must feel pretty good about it, I guess.
They got a good deal. I think they got a good deal on that one, but yeah.
Yeah, I think that might be one of those trades that helps out both teams, where both teams win.
Oh, I think so. Mm-hmm.
The great Max Scherzer going to be taking the mound for the Metropolitans. It's gonna be
good. Can he pitch forever? Can we just have Max in the league forever? I love him so much. He's not just because he's a great pitcher, but because he's so self-aware, and he knows who he is, and he doesn't mind telling everybody, you know, how he does things and everything. I love it. I think it's great.
I never really growing up, I thought they had some exciting players and everything with Gooden and Strawberry and all that, but I never thought I'd be like paying so much attention to New York Met baseball.
Yeah,
but with Scherzer and Verlander on the same team, like going into what will be their last years. I cannot wait to see what that happens there, and hoping for health. I hope they stay healthy all year.
Oh, me too.
It's the last of an era with those two. I don't know if we're going to see pitchers like them anymore.
You know, I'm not. If I had to choose between the two New York teams, of course, I'd choose the Mets to root for.
Yeah.
But this to me is kind of a can they do something that they came so close to doing in Detroit, but they never got to. They got to the World Series a couple of times, but they lost both times they got to the series. Can they finally do that together? Can they finally close the book with them and make and the Mets in the same? I mean, not only will New York go bananas if the Mets win, you know, win everything, but the fact that you've got these two old warriors on your team that were teammates, you know, many years ago. I think that's a great storyline, and that would be, as long as they're not playing the Twins, I'm like, I'll root for the Mets for
that. Yeah, I hear you on this. The Yankees will have Gerrit Cole hitting the mound. The Athletics, Kyle Mueller. Philly with Aaron Nola. Pittsburgh will have Mitch Keller. St. Louis will have Miles Mikolas. The Padres, Blake Snell. I thought they'd go with Darvish there, but maybe giving him a little bit more time off from the World.
A little surprise.
Yeah, World Baseball Classic.
Well, maybe they should have one of their shortstops pitch because they got to do something, right?
Wait, man, the amount of money I'm paying those guys, they should, like, you better be able to do, can you cook?
Exactly.
I'm going to have them cleaning up on the ballpark, too. Like, I'm paying you $350 million. Get out there and pick up a broom. Get out there and clean. Paying these guys. If you are looking at your MLB roster this year and you're like, hey, why don't we have a shortstop? They're all on San Diego.
And they have an active roster. Okay, the regular active roster on a major league team is 26. I think San Diego's at like 35.
Yes.
Somehow they ended up with a 35-man active roster. I'm not sure on that.
Blake Snell, their opening day starting pitcher, also a shortstop. Also a shortstop.
One of the rare left-handed shortstops.
San Francisco Giants got Logan Webb taking the mound. Luis Castillo, new with Seattle, I believe. He's going to be taking the mound for the Mariners. Did he just get there, or was he there last year? I know he was with the Reds before.
Mid-season last year. And they kept him, because I think he had more time on his contract, so Seattle's got him for like at least another year.
I got to say, similar to Baltimore, one of those teams I'll have my eye on, see if they keep getting better here. Shane McClanahan for Tampa Bay. Jacob DeGrom for the Texans. Again, that's still surprising to me to see him with Texas.
Another interesting storyline: Texas could either be really good or the worst team in the league. Well, it could swing either way. I mean, it's crazy to think
they keep spending all this money and nothing happens. This is their interesting stat: the Rangers will use their 15th different opening day starter in the last 15 years.
That's not a good sign.
No,
that's really not a good sign.
That's a franchise that gets forgotten about oftentimes, and that's crazy to me. That is a team that was one of those, like when we were kids, the Rangers, I don't know, I'm not saying that they were always competitive, but you darn sure knew who they were.
Like, oh my gosh.
Don't they have Corey Seager?
They've got Corey Seager. They got Marcus Semien. I mean, they've got some really good players, and now they've got some decent pitch. I mean, it all depends on if DeGrom stays healthy. That's the big question. Will he be able to pitch, you know, like 100 innings? I mean, who knows?
And I feel like we do this every year. Or a team like that, look at all the money they're spending, and they don't win. We do the same thing with the Angels. They got the two greatest players in the game, and they don't win and all this. Yeah. But it happens. It doesn't just happen to these teams. It happens all over the place. Like, a lot of teams have this happen to them. You just really can't buy a championship. I know it's happened in history. I'm not saying it's never happened before, but more times than not, that it does not work. It does not end up winning.
You may be able to buy yourself into the playoffs, but no, the championship. No, there's just too many hurdles you have to do. It's just you can't do it.
Wrapping up your opening day starting pitchers, Blue Jays will have a right-hander Alex Mona joining, and the Nationals will have a lefter Patrick Corbin pitching for them. Those are your opening day starting pitchers.
Very good.
Should be fun. Opening day this Thursday. Of course, that means Rafter baseball right around the corner as well. We are your home of your Wisconsin Rapids Rafters. We'll be talking more about that on next Monday's Playmakers. I wanted to save some time to be able to focus on MLB and then talk about, of course, the Northwoods League and our Rafters a little bit more. We'll do that next Monday. So your homework for going into next Monday, listeners out there, we want to hear your thoughts about the Rafters. What are you excited about with Rafters baseball going into the 23 season?
I wouldn't expect what they did last year. That was kind of historic. But yeah. Hopefully it's another good year. Looking forward here.
Wrapping up the show, I did want to touch a little bit about NFL and touching on the Green Bay Packers. This came out over the weekend on Wisconsin Public Radio, and a big shout out to Joe Schultz with the nice reporting that the Packers and local officials are working to bring the NFL draft to Wisconsin. Landing the draft would bring an estimated $94 million in economic impact to the area and to the state.
Whoa.
The Packers are the Packers, along with officials, are trying to get the 25 or 27 NFL draft to town. Now, first, this arguably, journalistically, I have to mention that this is one of my favorite things in the universe. Yes. And having it in, I've never been to it in person. If it's in Wisconsin, you sign me up, you know? I mean, of course.
Oh, there he goes, waiting in line already.
Yeah, I'm only half here right now, everybody. The other part of me is literally in Green Bay right now, just waiting to see what happens with this. Now, I think this is also a really smart thing by the NFL and by teams. Very few teams are going to be able to host a Super Bowl. You will never see a Super Bowl hosted in Lambeau. That's just not going to happen. No. Logistically, they can't work it out. And, of course, obviously the weather factor and everything. Mm-hmm. But everybody can host a draft. Draft's going on less than a month, literally a month from today. The NFL draft will kick off on April 27th. Pretty nice weather. Yeah, nothing to worry about there. It's a time of year that most people can travel and get around. So hosting an NFL draft, I think every NFL team should get a chance to do this. And not Green Bay? You know, again, $94 million that you would not have to a state or to an area without it. So, I mean, that alone, I would think, would bring people in. I am a little curious to see if people are as interested in this as I would be.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, what you were saying about the $94 million, that carries a lot more weight in Green Bay than, say, New York.
Right.
I mean, Green Bay, I mean, that's the kind of like money that really can make a difference. In a big, big city, nah, not so much. You know, it's just another thing. But I think we're onto something there. I think Green Bay really should try to get this.
The Packers and Discover Green Bay aren't looking at 2026 because Lambeau Field will host the Wisconsin Badgers football game against Notre Dame that year. So just as a side note to college fans out there, that should be a really cool game.
No kidding.
Badgers, Notre Dame at Lambeau. Whew, that is going to be a good one.
You know, that is a game where I will literally root for Wisconsin, for the Badgers.
Oh, God, yeah.
Much I hate Notre Dame.
Yeah, I can't stand I hate Notre Dame so much, yes. I literally can't think of one team that Notre Dame could be facing that I would root for Notre Dame. I have nothing. I got nobody.
They could somehow play the Yankees. They could play the Yankees.
Yeah. There we go. Maybe then. Seth, thanks so much for pitch hitting today and hanging out with us.
Not a problem. It was a lot of fun.
That was a good show. Good show, brother. And thank you to all your listeners that called in. Thank you so much for that. Be listening next Monday for more Playmakers brought to you by Quality Plus Printing, getting your words out here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, locally grown radio.